another dimension, a dimension of insight, a dimension of understanding. You are entering a place where reality collides with truth. There are no limits, there are no boundaries. This is Off Planet Radio.
Back to hour number two of Off Planet Radio Live for July 24th, 2013. And backing out of that last hour, my clips did not play for my outro music, and it just froze up on me. And this happens from time to time. It does to me. It doesn't happen to George Norrie, but that's a whole other story as well. Our guest tonight is Jeff Danilek, and we will be looking at probably the other side of Jeff's work this hour. His website for this hour will be quest4spirit.org. That's quest4spirit.org. And before I bring this up, I am going to open it up for some calls if some of you want to call in. The numbers are on the website at the top of the page. You will see the call-in numbers. Telephone line is 717-910-0544, and we'll bring you in. Or on Skype, you can just type in my name, one string, lowercase. And that will connect you on Skype as well if you want to talk. The people in the chat room, you have to remember something. We present balanced information, which includes opinions and insights and topics that you may disagree with. I think this is healthy. I think we need to be honest enough with ourselves that we can listen to people who hold a specific perspective. And I understand that many of you have had experiences and many of you come from a position that's a little on the other side of the arc, but at the same time, I want to hear what people have to say, their truth, and you should too. And in turn for that, you can come on and join the conversation, and you can be a guest on the show as well. If you've got something you want to talk about, contact me on the website, host@offplanetradio.com. And with that, I'm going to bring my guest and my co-host, Chris Holly, back up. Welcome back, guys. Hi, Chris.
Hey, I'm here and ready to go. How about you, Jeff?
Looking forward to the second hour.
So it's always kind of funny. There's so many different viewpoints out there, and I tend to kind of keep my own opinions and experiences sometimes a little under radar, because I like to bring people on and let them be authentic in what they're doing. And your work is, as a researcher, is valuable to the community as well. I've always said that skeptics are not cynics and they are not disinfo agents. They are people who are coming from a perspective that is basically rooted in verifiable information. Something that I will say the internet has gone a long way towards eroding, because there's so much crap on the internet that we all have to exercise discernment as well. So there always is a little bit of controversy here, but that's okay. That's part of the argument as well. anything you want to add to that, Jeff?
Well, I can appreciate that people have had their own experiences, and I can only speak to what I have had happen to me, what makes sense to me. Certainly I understand that, and I've had discussions with people get very emotional about these subjects, and I appreciate that. But all I ask them to do is step aside for a minute, get the emotions out of the way, and see if anything I say makes sense. And if it doesn't, then they can just ignore it and go back to what they want to believe, or they can maybe expand beyond what they already know and see if there's anything that speaks to them.
So the spiritual...
Can I add something in here?
Go ahead, Chris, please.
I just would like to say to people that have had experiences, I know that it's very easy, or the immediate reaction when someone is skeptical or questions you or calls you a liar, to become angry and extremely frustrated. I understand that. However, you have to know that really until they experience or witnessed or encountered the thing that you did, they're going to have a problem with it. And you've got to learn to get your focus around that so that you can find a place to apply what happened to you in order to get more information put out, even if it's just a tiny bit. You cannot get your back up right away that people aren't going to believe you, because they're not. And you know, all of you, that I have had amazing, incredible experiences in my life, and I have constantly gone up against this, yet I just keep banging that drum and writing and trying to bring forth the information that I do know about, because that is the only way slowly people are going to start to accept this and understand it and become curious enough to want to know more. And that's the hurdle that we're at. It's the non-believers in full denial and not wanting to know anything about this, and the people that have experienced it facing, you know, real cruelty in my mind about what these people have gone through. Believe me, once you've had an experience that is undeniable right in front of your face or to your body, something done to you, you cannot imagine how life-changing and life-altering it is. But my thing here is, if you are on the side that you've had to live with this and you're not getting any respect, the only thing you do is hang tough, hang strong, and try to continue sticking to your story, telling them what happened, and hoping that somehow it'll benefit people. Because it's only a matter of time that you might be the next one who's looking dead into the face of the unknown, and perhaps listening to this show or reading something about all these subjects will stick with you. And it will be the very thing that gets you through it alive. And I know that's like a big statement, but trust me, there are many people that don't. And that's due to a lot of it, their ignorance, that they didn't know to run or walk in the other direction or just stand perfectly still. A certain amount of information that would probably be given to them if they did listen to all sides of the coin. So, yes, this is all very interesting and it's all unknown, but I think we're avoiding something, and it's the fact that some of this is very dangerous and we should take it seriously and be a little less cruel to people that have to live through these encounters, because they're not pleasant. And there's no place else that you will find people kidnapped, abused, or harmed that they come back or returned and society does it to them again. No, they would be, taken care of. They would be brought to the hospital. People would protect them. There would be an investigation. It's not done to people that suffer these events. So all of you have to keep these things in mind and understand this is just things we are not yet smart enough to understand. But we will someday. And maybe then, you'll realize, don't be so harsh and critical of some of these people, because they have lived through terrible things. And there, I got off my soapbox.
And in all fairness, I think Jeff has been very balanced tonight in his presentation and keeping an open mind about this phenomena. And so with that, if there are no callers, and you're welcome to butt in, we'll take your calls. But I want to flip the conversation over to spirituality. And I know Chris wants to talk about reincarnation. But I want to kind of qualify this conversation. Because, Jeff, when I read your Quest for Spirit pages, I kind of saw myself in what you were talking about as well, with a background in Christianity and grappling to understand the difference between religion and spirituality. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, you know, all my life I have largely come out of the Christian church. For 20 years I was evangelical Christian, and I was very much into the Bible, into the, you know, fire and damnation and saving people and all that stuff. Then about 15 years ago, I started to question some of the tenets of the church, some of the belief systems, the second coming and hell and damnation, stuff like that. Started to explore other paths. I discovered reincarnation along the way, actually through the writings of Edgar Cayce, mm-hmm. people, mm-hmm. who it turns out was actually a very strong, devout Christian all of his life. A lot of people didn't know that. I certainly didn't know that when I started looking into it. And one thing led to another. Next thing you know, I kind of broadened my horizons. I actually was one of those people that said, you know, maybe the Bible doesn't have all the answers. Maybe I don't know everything. And through that, I was able to experience a number of events in my life that have led me down a different road entirely. One that I'm very happy to pursue. Not that being a Christian was a waste of time or anything by any means. It was my spiritual, elementary school, if you will. But from those experiences, I've learned that there's a much bigger world out there spiritually, and I'm always excited to explore it. And each day I get up looking forward to seeing what I'm going to find out today that I didn't know yesterday.
And you see, that's the mindset that I find the most interesting. A lot of people who've listened to this show for a long time know I was actually doing Christian radio on shortwave and then on the internet up until, it's murky to define this, but I would say up until about 3 years ago, I still defined that way, although what I was expressing was actually a walk away from traditional doctrine and dogma of Christianity, and specifically evangelical fundamentalist Christianity. And I found out what happens when you begin to express that among those people, and I have to say it that way because I was basically, you know, if they could have physically gotten a hold of me, I'd have wound up on a cross or some similar fate as well for asking the questions that I ask and drawing some of the conclusions that I came to. Because for a lot of fundamentalist Christianity, the beginning and end of everything is the Bible, and more specifically, their interpretation of it, which is actually more correct from my standpoint. Did you encounter the mindset of basically being defined as a heretic, or were you able to do yours a little bit more quietly than I did mine?
Well, I never encountered a lot of that in terms of being considered a heretic or anything like that. Part of the reason was, I think, because I was, you know, the company of Christians that I kept were generally tend to be people that were a little more open-minded, like myself. Mm-hmm. I tend to be more or less repelled by people who were very dogmatic, very in your face. So I didn't really associate with them anyway. So the people I did associate were at least, they may not have agreed with me, but at least they weren't, nasty about it. And so it wasn't really difficult for me to leave. What I felt like when I left the church was that I had graduated from school, and it was time to move on to other lessons. I was stuck in the church. I wasn't learning anything new. It was the same doctrines over and over, and I thought there's got to be more to this than, you know, the Easter story over and over and over again. And what I think really tipped the balance in my favor was that I just could not believe that God was cruel, that God sent people to hell forever for just not believing the correct things,
yeah,
or believing them in the right way. And that, right, I think, was the thing that really got me looking at other ideas and being willing to do it. But it's scary. You know, it's really very frightening to have a certain belief system for many years and then taking a chance by questioning it and kind of walking away. And it takes you a little while to acclimate to this idea that, you know, I can question these things and God's not going to strike me dead so far. It's really changed my attitude about God is what it's done. See God to go from this sort of untouchable being out there to really something that's a very real part of your life on a daily basis is really quite exhilarating. And so maybe in some ways I found God through leaving the church.
And for those of you who are listening to the background noise, I have a window open here in the studio because I turned the air conditioning off. So we've got the 1031 special coming through right now, carrying coal from up north to wherever they take coal these days. So you'll get train sounds and plane sounds this time of night on the air, and I apologize for that. We're not in an acoustically perfect studio either. Going back to what you were talking about, Jeff, defining religion and spirituality, it seems to me like religion, and I do tend to be somewhat of a conspiracy theorist, but over the years I came to the conclusion that religion was set up as a form of kind of another form of control for human beings. And, you know, I base that on the history of Rome and the history of the Vatican and the history of how books were altered, burned, torn up, and deleted. And in fact, certain people were actually murdered over the course of the first 1,200 years in order to suppress inquiry into things that they didn't want us to know about. Did you dig into the books outside the Bible? Did you have an epiphany? Mine was reading the Gospel of Thomas and some of the Gnostic books.
Yes, actually, I went down that road too, looking at the Nag Hammadi books, the Apocrypha, some of the other books that were not included, reading some other people that were questioning where the Jesus legend came from, things of that mm-hmm. nature. A lot of Christians, and I found this out firsthand, really have a very sanitized version of how the church came into being and how it's operated for the last 2,000 years. We were taught, you know, that basically the disciples wrote down everything Jesus said word for word. They made sure it was held together and it was purified and kept from being polluted by others. And all the, you know, there's all these great saints and all this stuff. When you start looking into it, you find that it is a pretty nasty affair. It's kind of like what people say about you know, hot dogs and sausage. If you like them, don't go to a factory that makes them and see how they
yeah,
really are put together.
Exactly.
You'll never touch
yeah.
one again, you know. So once I saw that I was being basically told things about the church that weren't really true in terms of its origins and how it maintained itself, that made me question a lot of things about it. And so that was kind of part of the unfoldment of my spiritual journey. I'm not angry with the church. I think it's perfectly understandable considering the era and the times why they would do those things. But I do think that the church needs to be honest about its past and come to terms with it. And I'm seeing even evidence that they are starting to do that a little bit, you know, with the Vatican apologizing to the Jews and things of that nature. So you're starting to see some movement. But I think God has use for the church. I think he can use any spiritual assembly like that for good to reach people. I know a lot of very wonderful Christian people. I'm not at all an advocate of, you know, doing away with the church. I think that if it's where you find your spiritual nurturing, that's where you should go. But by all means, don't be afraid to look elsewhere if it's not meeting your needs.
Yeah, and truthfully, you know, what you said earlier, I struggled with a malevolent God that would strike you and put you into an eternal burning hell because of things that you obviously don't know. And that kind of takes us now over into reincarnation, because one of the things that I've grappled with for a long time is, if we've lived prior lives, why don't we remember them? Or why don't we remember them well enough to have some certainty about it? And yet, for me, there was always this kind of weird deja vu thing, even as a kid, the sense that, I don't know, I'd been here before, but I don't remember who I was, and I don't know why I don't remember. So, Chris, I know you want to go into reincarnation a little bit, so I'm going to kind of open this up for you to do some of the questioning here.
Yeah, well, I really wanted to talk to Jeff about this because I'm very confused by it. And I was not brought up in a religious household. It was a spiritual household, and I think it was a lot harder. I mean, every move that we made, it was brought to our attention that it has to be the right move, the right thing to do, because of karma and the universe and your place in it. There was no place to go and, like, get, you know, say a few prayers and be forgiven or anything like that. Our parents made us live the, you know, walk the hard road, and if we didn't, it was a problem. But back to reincarnation, Jeff, I think it exists. I interviewed someone once, and they had like a proven story. He went to where he was buried, where he once lived. He knew the whole story of his life before, and he knew that if they dug down into his grave, they'd find this piece of jewelry that his wife in the past life buried there with him, and yet they dug up the grave and found it there. So it was a really wild thing that I witnessed, but explain this to me. Both my parents are dead. One, I think, visits the family because we all see them constantly in our dreams, actually have seen them in our homes, my mother, and she, you know, we have like a communication with her. Now my father, he's just gone. In reincarnation, how does that work? Does everybody go into a new life? Do people not and stop at some point? And are those the spirits that we have exchange with now? And how, you know, how does it work? How does this reincarnation work so that there's still spirits around, yet you're supposed to be put back into another life? I'm very confused.
Well, that's a great question. It really is. And I address this to some degree in my two books on reincarnation, The Case for Reincarnation and The Mystery of Reincarnation. The best answer I can give you is that on the spiritual side, there is no such thing as time. Time is a element of the physical realm we live in. So once you die, it's not like there's no days of the week, there's no time. So you could be dead technically forever and alive forever, in a sense, if you think about it. So my theory or my belief is that when a person dies, they have a personality that has been formed while they were on this planet, the ego, if you could call it that, maybe. And just like the body, it's something that we develop in order to experience things in this realm. Otherwise, it's all, you know, we can't really experience anything if it's all conceptual. So when we do die, we shed the body, of course, and it also takes time for the personality that we have created to be reincorporated back into the master soul, if you will. So that's what lingers on, and sometimes people, that personality part will remain behind for some time. Maybe the person doesn't want to move on, maybe they're afraid to move on, they've kind of got one foot stuck between two worlds, and eventually they will move on, but it takes them some time often, and there's also things they want to do. They want to acclimate to this new experience, this new perspective. So, and I think also that it's you have what I call a master soul or an oversoul, and the oversoul is what's generating these different experiences, these different incarnations. And so they can generate multiple incarnations at the same time. So, you know, the you could be sharing the same soul with other people right now. You might meet someone
oh, wow.
who seems to really have the same wavelength you have. And you really, you hit it right off. You just know the kind of the way each other thinks. Really, truly soulmates. And it could actually be a soul sibling. It could be somebody that is that you are sharing the same oversoul with. So when someone passes, your parents or somebody like that, it's not that they're no longer reincarnating. It's just that there's an element of them that's still stuck in our linear time, but they're also at the same time moving forward in their own soul experience simultaneously. So you got to be able to hold both those concepts in your mind at once, that you can both living in time and outside of time at the same time.
Wow, that's a great answer. So in fact, our big or a master soul could be living in a few different dimensions. We could be a dead person. We could be reincarnated into a new life already and be 8 years old someplace, plus living mm-hmm. what we're living now, and possibly on another planet, some other kind of being. I mean,
sure.
that's a really wild, interesting concept. I love it.
Well, you
it
know,
explains
another thought,
it the best.
Think about this for a minute, is that you could actually be living this same life in different dimensions at the same time. So you could be having
right,
an entirely
multiverse.
Different set of experiences in another life as yourself.
I wonder if that's the parallel universe type concept. And, you
exactly.
know, now that you said that, couldn't reincarnation just be that we remember or slip or get in touch with another parallel universe where we just finished living or are living, and it's really that we are sensing and recalling and not reincarnation, that this has all been ongoing, do you know what I mean? And we have a slippage or something, and that's how, you know, we remember or see things that we can't understand. I'm sure everyone has the experience, as you said, where you meet another person and they are so similar to you, you just feel like you've always known them or they're part of you. That's very common, as well as going to some place you've never been before and knowing it, or mm-hmm. like remembering it, you know?
Well, the key to understanding reincarnation is to be able to live in the dichotomy of, instead of either or, of and. So in other words, you got to think that, yes, you're right, you could be in multiple parallel universes at the same time, but even then, the evolution of the soul is continuing through multiple incarnations. Now, whether they're on this planet or another planet, or even the same person living in multiple dimensions of time and space, is really secondary to the fact that the soul is just looking to evolve, and that's how it does it. It does it through multiple different ways. And the beauty of reincarnation, I discovered, is that it's purely voluntary. If you don't want to reincarnate on Earth, you don't want to come back here, you don't have to. The soul is quite patient. It has lots of different venues, lots of different ways that it can move you through the process. And so people really, believe it or not, are here because they want to be, not because they have to be. There's no kind of karma they have to repay because they did something wrong in the last life or something. But each life is an opportunity to experience everything instead of a conceptual way, in a practical way. The best way I've heard it explained
No, go ahead, please.
I was gonna say, the best way that I've heard it explained is that we are, in essence, God's means of experiencing himself or herself. In other words, God can conceive of, say, poverty, but God cannot experience poverty except unless we are born into poverty or whatever experience that we're going to have. And that's actually God experiencing these things itself. And so we are just cells in God's body having these experiences through God, for God, via God. So it's a little bit hard to imagine sometimes, but it really is astonishing when you think about it and really kind of wrap your brain around it and see the immense dimensions of experience and that life offers, that God is offering us through this.
Well, process. I think it makes a lot of sense what you're saying, actually. It explains a lot. Why, what is the purpose of children, you know, passing away, little kids? Are they souls that came in and decided, I don't want to finish this tour of duty, or what is the significance of that? I mean, that's how I always felt it was, you know, that they came in, looked around and said, no.
Nah, not this time. I'm good. I'll pass.
I think there's several different answers to this. I think you're right. Some people may come in and they really don't anticipate experiencing a full life. Maybe they only needed to come in for a short time. Maybe that was part of the parents' evolution, that they experienced losing a child. And it sounds cruel, but remember, there is no such thing as death.
Yep.
Not really.
Yep.
That's an illusion that we maintain. So when we think, my child died, the child didn't die. The child simply changed form from one vibrational level to another. Now, we call that death. But to the child, you know, it's blissful. So when people come into this incarnation and they leave for whatever reason, it doesn't mean whether they're a child or even they're 25 years old, young couple just got married and the husband gets killed or something. Those are all opportunities for God to experience, you know, the anguish of loss as well as the growth that comes from it. So there's lots of reasons that we come into an incarnation and leave it. Sometimes I think we leave them for circumstances beyond our control. I always think of the Holocaust and all of the souls, especially of the children, that were lost in the Holocaust. And I don't know if they all came in thinking, I'm going to serve as an example of what human evil looks like by dying this way, or if it was just events that occurred beyond their control. But, you know, I mean, that's why I call it the mystery of reincarnation, because we're all supposed to kind of figure this out on our own and see what makes sense to us.
Well, how much do you subscribe to the idea that, first off, the incarnations are soul lessons that we are learning? That would be the first question.
Well, I've heard put a different way. It's not so much that we're here to learn, it's that we're here to experience.
Yeah, I actually like that better. Thank you. Yeah.
You know, so we're actually here to remember what it is that we already knew. Think of it as, let's say you were a professional violinist. You were like one of the best violinists in the world, and then you had some kind of a brain injury, and you forgot how to play the violin. You had no clue how to even hold the thing. But you started to pick it up and you started to play with it, and eventually it starts coming back to you. And that's really kind of what's going on in many ways, is that we're just kind of picking it up and remembering that we used to play the violin, and we become better and better at it the more experiences we go through. And so that's my understanding of how it works, and that seems to work for me. It makes a lot of sense to me.
So people that have these extraordinarily lives, some of them that are filled with all kinds of experiences, have actually chosen to go for it and you know, ride through all those things to expand, grow their own souls, I guess. Is that a way of putting it?
To evolve, if you want to think about it that way. Usually the more experiences you go through, the greater your collection of understanding becomes. Just like in life, when you are in your 80s or 90s and you've had a very full life, your perspective on things is much different than it was when you were 15. You know,
right.
And you have acquired all of these experiences, both positive and negative. And they've gone into giving you an understanding of what life's all about. Now, if you could live for 1,000 years, imagine how many experiences you would go through. and how all of that would continue to shape your perspective, your understanding of the world. And so, since we can't live 1,000 years, you know, we can only live maybe 70, 80 years at a time, we go through these multiple incarnations, continue to build up these life lessons. And sometimes it's a step back, you know, sometimes we might end up in an incarnation which we don't really get much accomplished, or maybe we make some decisions that really end up very poor for us. But that's okay, that's part of the process. And sometimes failure is a bigger learning lesson than success is.
Mm-hmm.
So
does it ever come?
Pardon?
Does it ever come to an end? How do we know when we are really filling our cup to what we needed to experience?
Well, I think once you come to the realization that you have reached that level of awareness, then you don't need to reincarnate anymore. I think that you do get to a point where you sort of figured it out, but then. Here's the great thing about it, is that you can choose to forget it all again and start over. And continue to
go through this process.
Well, you know, but think of it, you're thinking of it from the perspective of someone who has had some negative experiences or whatever, but it really is a delicious experience to go through the process over and over again. And each time you do it, you're going to do it differently. So no two times are you going to go through the same evolutionary path and come out on the same point on a board. It's all going to be a different experience each time you do it.
And in between, or when we want to stop, we would then what? Be able to watch over the rest of, like, the God spirit, the multiple thing that we all may be part of, and just watch, or what do we do? What do you think?
I think that we're actually caught up into the greater divinity. Imagine, if you will, if you've ever gone to a concert and you really loved the music and you got really caught up into it, and you almost kind of forget where you are. You're so into it. And I think that's what it's like in the afterlife, is that we get caught up in the divine and we experience all the joy that is part of that. And the world becomes almost timeless to us. We could spend an eternity just doing that. At the same time, we're also living these lives, these different incarnations here, and we're picking up these new experiences, these new understandings. And it's a very rich motif of things woven together that create this experience we call life. And this experience that makes life worth living, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It's an awful lot to ponder. Let's put it that way. Yeah, it does.
Well,
actually,
these
it
are
does
like
make sense.
It's not only a lot to ponder, but it gives you a peek into the richness of what is really beyond our present scope of understanding. When you start to put it in that framework, multidimensional, multi-lifetimes, basically right now, you know, in this present body incarnation that is speaking between us tonight, we're sort of earthbound, and along with that, our consciousness is kind of rooted in that as well. But I think this view also gives us an ability to escape that. There's like an escape velocity, consciousness-wise, once we begin to ponder the kind of things that we're talking about.
Yeah, you actually transcend the world around you. Remember, Jesus said, be in the world, but not of the
right.
world.
Yeah.
That's what he was talking about. He also said that the kingdom of God is at hand, which meant it's actually present around you. And once you understand that you're you understand the process, you understand why it's happening, it makes it so much easier to deal with the challenges of life. You see them as just temporary learning experiences rather than, you know, some great drama that you have to go on and on about. And I think that's what gives
right.
you the peace that surpasses all understanding. It's like, hey, I don't like what's happening, but I understand that in the end it's all going to be okay no matter what. And you just don't get too upset about stuff after that.
Now, mediums.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead.
Mediums,
Chris.
And psychics. I'm sorry, mediums and psychics, Jeff, they seem to be able to slide back and forth. Many of them are just charlatans and making it up, but many of them truly know. You know, I think we all have it. We all have this intuition between us, but they seem to be able to slide back and forth to where people have already crossed over to this other dimension, or, you know, the other piece of the soul now somewhere else. How come we all can't do that more easily, and or why can they do it?
Well, let me ask you this. Why can't we all sing wonderfully? Some people just have a gift for music, and others, it's all they can do to carry a tune. So I think all that a psychic is, or a medium, is someone who has that developed sixth sense for whatever reason. It could be genetic, it could be spiritual, it could be whatever. It gives them the ability to peer through the veil. And I agree with you. I think we all have that capability, but very few of us will ever develop it in the same way that we could probably all learn to sing, but very few of us will actually take singing lessons and develop it. Some people just are natural. They just have they have a perfect tone. They have perfect pitch. They can just pick up music immediately. And that's what psychics do. They have this ability to see through to the other side that all of us have, but they just have it developed to a level that it's natural to them. Whereas to us, it's still a struggle, and we're always amazed when it actually happens. If we actually have a dream or something with a loved one in it, we're amazed, but to them, this is very common. This is old hat. This is something that happens to them all the time. They're not amazed, but we are.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The other thing that I was going to ask you in my cluster of questions here is, what is your take on the concept of soul groups? In other words, people who are basically coming into and out of incarnation cycles, and we'll speak specifically of Earth, but I don't think we need to, and I, you know, we'll just anchor it here and say that for me, I've had the sense that on my path in this time, I have met people that I just in my soul knew that I knew before, and they knew it, and I know that other people have experienced this. And what's your take on that in terms of, is this a soul group? Is there a group that works together? How, in your opinion, does that all work?
Well, like you say, birds of a feather flock together, and I think that's true of certain souls. I think there are entities you encounter, personalities you encounter over the different lives that are very beneficial to you, either in a positive or a negative way, and so they tend to... You make almost like a pact amongst you that you will interact periodically in different incarnations. A good example of that is my own wife. I've been married 28 years, and I did a past life regression. I was hypnotized, went back a couple of lifetimes. Turns out that my wife in this lifetime was actually my niece two lifetimes ago. We were very close. She died in childbirth, and I was distraught and took my own life as a result of it. I think we agreed, well, let's get together in another lifetime and try and do something more positive. And so in this lifetime, we're husband and wife. So I do think that you change roles back and forth. You can be the daughter, the son, the mother, the father, the wife, the friend, the enemy, the bad boss. You know, who knows what you were going to be in the next lifetime. But all of it's for growth. You're all doing this together as a means of mutually evolving your souls and gaining on these experiences. And you just sometimes find it easier to work with familiar souls than to start from scratch with new souls each time.
Yeah, it's, you know, this actually takes on, like, you know, even talking about it. And I have to say, you voiced a lot in the beginning of this conversation that summarized what I've come to believe over time. This whole multidimensional reincarnation is an unfortunate term because it seems married to this horrible karma thing. Basically, the Buddhist wheel of karma and this endless circle of lives that we have to go through because we didn't get it right this time. And I don't really believe that. I believe that experientially we go through these lives as a means to, very much like you said, experience things. But there's no penalty at the end of it, which I think is a lot of what religion has done. It's what Christianity did.
Yes.
It's what Hinduism did. That was the downfall of Hinduism, was basically it got so ridiculous that they were worshiping cattle, thinking that their ancestors had transmigrated. Can we get beyond the karma aspect of this in terms of something that's like sudden death over time?
Yeah. I mean, the events that happen to us in our lifetime, whether they're negative or positive, really are just kind of tools that we use to evolve. And once we leave this present incarnation and move on to the next one, we discard a lot of that. So all the racism, all of the sexism, all of the anger, hostility, the prejudice, all that stuff just is kind of flushed out like the toilet, and we just keep moving. We retain the positives, get rid of the negatives. I think that we can choose to come into specific incarnations that might be very challenging, but it's not a punishment. For example, I think of a Nazi who might decide to come back as an Orthodox Jew. Not as a punishment, certainly, but just so he has an ability to understand that perspective. That makes a lot of sense to me. So there's karma in the respect that there are consequences to what we do in our life, but I don't think that the consequences stay with us into eternity.
And also, if something bad happens to you, people feel maybe they're being punished for something they did in another lifetime, which would not be the case. How does fate play into this? For instance, when Randy and I end up doing this together because it's easy for us to do this together, and it's something that we both equally like and are interested in, was that fate that brought us here so that we experience this for a reason, or was it just part of the road?
It's synchronicity, actually. I think that you attract certain energies into your life at the right times, and you two apparently came together at a particular time for this particular purpose. I suppose you could call it fate, but the term I like is synchronicity, where events occur at a particular moment. They seem very random at the time, but in retrospect, you see, well, that was really the perfect thing that happened at that perfect time. Had it happened a year earlier or a year later, it wouldn't have worked. But it happened when it happened for a reason. And I guess you could take that into a lot of different things, not just relationships with people, but into your health issues and employment issues and all these different areas of your life where you wonder, what's going on here? You know, why is this happening?
Yeah, how did this happen? And then, right.
And then later on you think, oh, now I see why that happened. Okay, that makes sense. At the time it seems completely random and crazy. And then later on you say, well, I'm glad I went through that. Now I understand that that wasn't the person for me, or that wasn't the job for me. Or I learned to appreciate what I have because of the health challenge I went through. That kind of a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Been there, done that, all those things.
Yeah, God is good. The universe is a gentle place, and it's just a matter of looking around and seeing heaven around you, and that's the key to life to me.
Yeah, very well said.
I'm just enjoying sitting here, letting Chris Hawley do an interview tonight. This is great. Because I know she wanted to talk about this, and
I was just waiting.
I get a lot of opportunities to talk about these kinds of things because I've done spiritual radio over the years, and this has been a great conversation. And I know the chat room received it well. They were basically commenting that a lot of them feel that what you articulated tonight was a great perspective on it, because everybody's at some time in their life struggling with this, and I think For me, the last few years have been amazing because I've experienced the entire circle of life in what I will just call one gigantic spin cycle. And it forces those kinds of questions to the surface when you have the cycles of birth and death and what comes between them, which is very interesting and a whole other conversation that, Jeff, maybe you and I can have sometime, because it sounds like you've got some insight into that. So at the end of the conversation, you have really covered a wide array of topics tonight, and yet it seems like somehow or another there's a thread that runs through all of this that's uniquely your own. And I think listeners get a sense of that in talking to you and also by going over to your website. What are you looking to do in future? You actually have, I believe, a couple of fiction books as well, Jeff. Is that correct?
Right, yeah, Randy, I'm trying to get into novel writing. I'm very interested in teaching spiritual lessons through fiction, through parables.
Excellent.
And so I've got another number of manuscripts I'm trying to market out there. It's just kind of hard to find the right niche right now, but I believe that...
Talk to me after we get off the show tonight. I got an idea for you. But, that is actually... In my opinion right now, something that's sorely lacking is we've taken all of these subjects real uber seriously, and you can be more playful in a fictional setting. Is that kind of how you see it?
Definitely more immediate. People can really respond to things better in fiction because they can, you know, you can use real life experiences that they've probably gone through. And maybe they didn't understand why it happened, and now if they read your book and you have a similar situation in your story, it makes sense of their own experiences. So that's why I think fiction is a wonderful tool for teaching spiritual truth.
And I was also looking at some of the work that you've done in cryptozoology as well, and we didn't get into that tonight, but trust me, that's a subject I like to visit from time to time, and we can have that. One more time, wrapping it up tonight, Jeff, let people know where they can find you, the websites and publishing and all of that good stuff.
Okay, well, there's two websites. If you're interested in the paranormal stuff, go to OurCuriousWorld.com. And if you are interested in my writings on reincarnation and ghosts and things, religion, spirituality, things of that nature, that would be on Quest for Spirit. That's quest4spirit.org. And I look forward to receiving any input from anybody that goes there on the email and see what you think.
Absolutely. Hey, we're going to close it out. Jeff, stay on the line. I want to talk to you after we go off. And so that's going to wrap it up for this week. We'll be back next week with Doc Vega. Coming up August 7th, our friend Ken Pfeiffer joins us from New Jersey MUFON and UFOPhotosAndNews.org. And we have a whole bunch of guests lined up going right up to the end of summer. We'll do all that. We'll be back here again next week. This is Off Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins with Chris Holly and our